I'm Carol Coletta, and this is Smart City. The redevelopment of riverfronts has been one of the drivers of urban revitalization in many U.S. cities. Today's guests are working to bring new life to two of those riverfronts. Benny Lenderman is leading the effort to bring Memphians to the Mississippi River. He is president of the Memphis Riverfront Development Corporation, a public-private partnership charged with making the stretch of the Mississippi River at the city's front doorstep more people-friendly. Kathy Hudzik is Chicago Mayor Richard Daley's point person for building a riverwalk along the sometime-forgotten Chicago River. We'll talk to them about their progress and the challenges they still face today on Smart City. But first, the news. You're listening to Smart City. I'm Carol Coletta. Benny Lenderman is president of the Riverfront Development Corporation, the nonprofit board that grew out of Memphis Mayor Willie Harrington's goal to redesign the city's doorstep where the Mississippi River is at its most majestic. He comes to the job naturally, having served as the city's public works director, where he is credited with a major park expansion along the riverfront and building the first significant section of a bluff walk. Benny is a native of Memphis, an avid fisherman, and a dedicated University of Memphis basketball fan, which, at this time of the year, matters a lot. Benny, describe the portion of the Mississippi Riverfront you're working with.
Yeah, what the Riverfront Development Corporation is working with is a five-mile linear stretch of river that sort of primarily borders its downtown.
You commissioned Cooper Robertson, the New York-based planning firm, to develop the master plan for the riverfront. When was that?
That plan began in 2000.
So you're 8 years down the road. What were the primary ambitions of that plan?
I think at that time the plan was, I'm not sure anyone really had a handle on what the riverfront could be and how it could be. Take advantage of this wonderful resource in Memphis. And the Cooper Robertson plan covered an incredibly large piece of area and was probably the expectations were a little bit too great of what we could really do at the time, but it was the first time someone in a long time had looked at how can Memphis best utilize this resource.
You said it was an incredibly big area they were dealing with. Was it bigger than the five-mile stretch?
No, it's 5 miles, but in most cases, someone's looking at doing a master plan of really what you do. I mean, that's a large area. You know, for instance, it's much more than downtown. It's much more, you know, it travels a long way up and down the river.
Of course, the Mississippi River at Memphis has some very special challenges. This is not just any ordinary river. What are some of the challenges that you and Cooper Robertson faced when you first began thinking about what might be possible on the riverfront?
Yeah, I mean, the reason the Memphis riverfront sort of is the way it is and a lot of passive usage and not a lot of interconnections with this downtown is a good one. It's the fact that the Mississippi River fluctuates as much as 57 feet annually on a given basis. It floods in the winter, in the spring, and then it dries up in the summer. And making that connection and deal with that fluctuation is extremely, extremely difficult.
Now, for those who are not familiar with the area or what the rise and fall of a river by 57 feet really means, what are the implications of that?
I mean, especially in today's day. I mean, back when Memphis was first founded and paddlewheel steamboats were bringing cotton down the Mississippi River and offloaded with slaves on a cobblestone landing, you know, it was frankly easier to deal with a 57-foot fluctuation than it is today. I mean, today, especially having to bring everything that's done with public dollars to meet the American Disability Act standards, it sort of complicates everything on a waterfront. And in Memphis's situation, not only do we have this huge fluctuation, probably four or five times as great as what most coastal cities have to deal with, but you also had a large part of the waterfront was historic, which really made things difficult. And then you had a much larger part of the waterfront that was all in public land that was both both a benefit and a detriment to what we wanted to do.
How would that be a detriment?
Memphis is totally is greatly blessed with having 250 acres of green space adjacent to its to the water and to the river. And where many cities, almost every city I've ever been to, is spending a great deal of money having to buy back its waterfront and convert private land into at least allow public access or make it public land. In Memphis' situation, it was just the opposite. We had, and some of it was flood, but we had a great deal of acreage on the river declared public. And especially in today's world, trying to deal with the issues of converting public land, which is totally unused, to a very vibrant and appropriate mixed-use development that would bring people to the water, but also brings some private development aspect, to create the activity and ancillary things that are needed for the public. Well, you get quite a bit of resistance from the public sector, who are so fearful of government taking away their public land.
So the good news is that it's public land. The bad news is that it's public land that, in your opinion, is underused. And when you try to create or introduce more intense uses, some of which may be run by private interest, then you get pushback from the public.
You're absolutely, with the mindset of the public that today, anytime you're trying to convey, at least our experience has been, and the experience of other cities too, because we've talked to them, is that you get quite a bit of pushback from converting a public land to something that has other uses that are not totally public and also provides additional density. I mean, everybody loves green space, everybody loves parks, and certainly no more than I do, but the only thing that comes close to being worse than no green space is too much unused green space. And then it just causes the park itself to sort of be stagnant.
That's a hard concept to convey.
It's impossible to convey. I mean, because everybody, I mean, I think, and in some cases rightly so, I think the public is so fearful of government coming in and taking something away and giving it to somebody else and not understanding that it's for their good. It makes, you have to spend a great deal of effort, be very transparent in your actions, and involve the public to a very large degree in order to accomplish something like that.
And then it's still tough. Let's go back and talk about the opportunities that you and Cooper Robertson saw in the original master plan done in 2000. You have this 5-mile stretch of riverfront. You have 250 acres of green space adjacent to the riverfront. You have the 57-foot rise and fall of the river, and this is all at the doorstep of downtown Memphis. So there are, of course, certain challenges, but the proximity to downtown gives you a certain opportunity. How did you imagine the riverfront being developed?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody saw this great opportunity because downtown Memphis was having this great renaissance of residential redevelopment, which continues today. And huge numbers of people were coming in to take advantage of that residential opportunity that didn't exist before. And even though office and other things were praying a little bit, you had this critical mass of activity that was going on in downtown Memphis, and what you wanted to do was connect it to the river. And Memphis had grown where we had this public land, and we had a border of public land that consisted of parking garages and libraries that have long since served their purpose and fallen into disrepair, fire stations that sort of were on the waterfront that certainly created this wall of inactivity that separated downtown from the river. So, I mean, our hope was to we were fortunate. We didn't have to create the momentum of having this big surge in development in downtown Memphis, but we wanted to help it along and draw it toward the river so that the, you know, downtown could connect to the river with activities and amenities that could benefit and attract both tourists and Memphians alike.
And how did that get manifested in actual projects?
One large project, it's just now getting under construction, was, again, with this 57-foot fluctuation, we had public land on the river, but no one could get to the water. I mean, you were above the water, you were above flood, of course, but in the sense we had all this green space along the water's edge, and we probably had less physical access to the water than almost any city in America. So there was a project that was we called Bill Street Landing. It was this multi-dimensional park-like project that included docking facilities and terraces going down to the water. It could be done in a way that allowed the water to come up into the project and provide continuous access for tourists and residents alike to be able to get down close to the water in any given water stage, whether it was at the bottom of the 57-foot scale or the top. And that was the, you know, which we think is going to be a huge benefit, more so than most Memphians realize today, as the impact it will make of being have a focal point where people can connect to the water. And then in addition to that, you know, part of our plan called for continuous connections of pedestrian access throughout this 5-mile stretch of the riverfront. There already were a number of nice parks, nice amenities, a number of developments coming on board. They were private, and we needed to sort of connect those things together with a series of various different types of trails and connections. So this whole linear waterfront had this public access connection that would both, you know, benefit the user and, be perfectly honest, is also benefit the developers who were building adjacent to it, and hopefully to continue that economic development alternative. And then early on in our plan, Cooper Robinson came up with a very aggressive long-term solution to some of the issues of the future growth needs of downtown Memphis, which included a very controversial sort of changing the landscape type project, which was the land bridge connecting what we call Mud Island and Mud Island River Park back to downtown, bridging across a Stillwater Harbor in a physical land fashion and creating a lake. And one of the, which also told us something that I think many people have learned and we were certainly learning, is that this was a long-term solution to the issues that Memphis was facing, and the public, and this solution was not received very well for the public for good reason, in that this was something that probably will be needed some 20 years from now, maybe even longer, maybe shorter, depending on the growth and prosperity of downtown Memphis. The public isn't equipped to deal with solutions or alternatives that you're talking about 20 years down the road. And I've since had discussion with a number of people across the country who are, quote, you know, public input specialists who will, you know, just cringe at the idea of trying to get input from the public on something that's going to happen much more than 5 years from now. They just don't have the skills or tools to deal with it.
It's interesting you say that, because frequently that's the charge leveled at politicians, that politicians think too short term.
It is kind of interesting, but it's true. In fact, in our case, be perfect honest, or any other entity that exists, when you're going into a long-term planning stage like that, I mean, the public can't see more than 2, 3, maybe 5 years. The elected officials or your board or whoever you're working for can't see they can, much beyond that, okay? They may see 10, but truthfully, I mean, except for the professionals, I'll say, are people in that specific development business, it gets very difficult to talk about long-term land uses because neither the public or the elected officials are equipped to deal with that. And it's frankly, you know, not, I mean, it's not their fault. They're not doing it for their own selfish reasons in many cases. It's just beyond their ability to comprehend.
How do you think being an engineer, Benny, affects the way you think about developing and planning for the Memphis Riverfront?
I mean, it certainly gives you the background that you probably see things in a more procedural fashion, more orderly. You do this. Much less subjective. How do things actually fit together? But I also think that you also are looking long term and not short term, because whether you're building a bridge or you're building a major highway or you're building a wastewater treatment system to serve a public, I mean, you're not doing any of those for today. Today really doesn't matter. And many people, especially in today's society, you know, don't do that. I mean, they're, you know, and even in, unfortunately, in, you know, with the type of, you know, residential and commercial construction we see today, people aren't building the buildings for 50 years anymore. They're not building houses for 50 years.
Very true. You've mentioned several times the controversy surrounding what you've tried to do on the riverfront, and that controversy became very organized. It spawned an opposition group called Friends for Our Riverfront, and you've talked about why you think the plan provokes so much opposition. From your perspective, did the opponents have legitimate points to make, and have they influenced the plan at all?
I think they certainly have influenced the implementation of the plan. There's no doubt about it.
For good or bad?
In some cases, for good, but in most cases, probably bad. There were some good. It's like anything else. I mean, Memphis is a little bit different than, I mean, the opposition that we generated had, you know, in some cases had to do with land that their ancestors had given to the city. So you almost had, blood involved, and you know, so it almost got, truthfully, I think many of them felt it personally. You know, your public opposition groups are always very emotional. And they get very involved in their issues. In this case, they maybe got even more than that, because in some cases they took it personal, because some of their great ancestors gave this property to the city for some reason, and they felt like they had ought to somehow still have a role in deciding that. So, and I think, but I do think that at the time there were some people involved on the board who were wanting to be much more aggressive, move things too fast than ought to happen. And so you did have that. When you had that pushback from the public, you did absolutely probably get a more focused, realistic view on what really can occur and where you ought to be spending your effort on. And I think as it filtered out, some of that was good, but you know, there's still, unfortunately, a resistance to some things because of that, some of those earlier issues.
Now, you've started Beale Street Landing, right?
Yes. We've taken bids. We hadn't gone to construction, but we'll go to construction in a matter of days, probably.
And when will it be finished?
It's probably a 2-year project.
And where are you on the walkway?
I mean, we're building our walkway in a number of segments. We've added a bunch of segments, and we're adding a bunch more segments and pieces. I think we're fairly happy with how that's progressing. Is anything else? We still have future issues. We have issues with railroads. We have issues with churches. We have issues with, you know, so and in some cases the public's on our side, in some cases the public's against us. But I mean, that, I guess when you look at your series of projects and that's occurring, it's sort of a good barometer that you're probably headed in close to the right direction. I mean, you're not making, you know, people on both sides are upset with different pieces. And rightfully so, that input is good, but at some point, the elected officials and the entities that are given responsibility for taking care of the public lands or the public purpose of the lands has to sort of move forward in a direction that they think is in the best long-term interest of the city of Memphis. And that's one thing during all this, somehow, miraculously, we've continued to get the, you know, very solid support from the both city administration through the mayor and through the city council, which is the two of them who don't typically agree, but we've somehow gotten support of both of them on most of our issues, even with this, in many cases, huge public opposition to some of our projects.
Which riverfronts, Benny, do you take inspiration from?
All of them. But, I mean, they're all different. I mean, I take inspiration from how they got things done. I mean, you can go, you know, everybody talks about Baltimore's Inner Harbor. Baltimore's Inner Harbor has nothing to do with our opportunities in Memphis. But you can take great inspiration of how they got it done. You can go to New York City, and there's several projects there. But Battery Park City, which Cooper Robertson sort of talked about a lot if they were getting started with us, quite different sort of from what Memphis can do, but somewhat. But the integration of the mixed-use development and on some public properties, which made the park a much greater benefit to the city, certainly has a relationship to what we're trying to do in Memphis. But, you know, if you go to, I mean, what Los Angeles is trying to do and do is deal with some of their issues is very difficult. But, I mean, you learn from what they're doing, how Louisville connected. Louisville had a similar situation. They had a bunch of flood land. They took advantage of it along the river. They had historic cobblestones. So you learn quite a bit from them, or Cincinnati, because those are sort of cities who have, they don't have the fluctuation that we have, but they have similar fluctuations. So you see how they deal with that and how they deal with providing access, providing things that are beneficial to the community. I think today, you have to be very public about what you do. I think you need to spend a great deal of time on really trying to determine what input it is you need from the public. What are things the public can actually grasp and give you input that's helpful, that's beneficial?
Benny Linderman is president of the Riverfront Development Corporation in Memphis. The latest news in the world of urban planning, design, and development comes to us from PlanEdison assistant editor Nate Berg.
It's an election year, and as could be expected, there's been a flood of discussion amongst politicians about what's wrong with the country. But as a recent New York Times editorial points out, this discussion about the shortfalls and major problems in American society has hardly even approached the realm of urban issues. With the latest statistics chalking up more than 65% of Americans in urban areas, the editorial argues that the candidates are virtually ignoring a huge chunk of the people and votes they're so eagerly trying to get behind their ticket. Republican candidate John McCain has made little mention of cities in his campaigning thus far, and Democratic hopefuls Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton have similarly spent scant time discussing the afflictions of urban America. National leadership on these issues will be crucial, according to the New York Times, and hearing about how these candidates propose to provide that leadership should become a more prominent focus of their campaigns to run the country. And while national leadership on urban issues is being seen as seriously lacking, it is local city leadership that has been especially active in proposing new ideas and solutions. even if they aren't very popular. In L.A., Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa is pushing forward with controversial plans to convert two of the city's most used crosstown arteries into mostly one-way streets. According to an article in the Los Angeles Times, Villaraigosa's plan involves removing one lane of street parking from each of the two streets during the morning and evening rush hours, allowing three lanes to run down the streets when traffic is heaviest. Local businesses are opposed to the plan, and city councilors had been fighting hard to nix the proposal. The new rule is set to take effect March 8th, and Villaraigosa has announced plans to further increase the one-way conversions within the next year by converting a lane on each of the streets to handle the morning westbound rush and the evening eastbound exodus. Opposition to this expansion of the plan is expected to be even more fierce. And in New Mexico, opposition to another transit project is growing in numbers and volume, as planned extensions to a regional commuter rail project are being blamed for shortfalls affecting the rest of the state's transportation budget. The Associated Press reports that state lawmakers are calling on Governor Bill Richardson to hold off on $400 million plans to expand the Rail Runner Express commuter rail system, blaming it for a nearly $500 million shortfall in highway project funding. They say the project is poorly conceived, as the populations of the towns it serves are too low to justify the spending. But despite the vocal charges of the state's lawmakers, officials of the Richardson administration claim there is no connection between the Rail Runner's budget and the shortfalls experienced by the state's highway projects. Plans to continue the expansion are expected to move forward. For Planetizen, I'm Nate Berg.
Nate Berg is assistant editor for Planetizen.com. After a short break, we'll continue our conversation on the development of America's great riverfronts with Kathy Hudzik, who is responsible for the Riverwalk on the Chicago River. You're listening to Smart City. You're listening to Smart City. I'm Carol Coletta. Kathy Hudzik manages the City of Chicago's river initiatives. Her responsibilities include efforts to improve water quality, increase public access, protect wildlife habitat, and enhance neighborhood life along the Chicago River. She has consulted on urban river revitalization in Los Angeles, Guatemala City, and in Kyoto. She is an avid paddler and cyclist. Kathy described the proposed riverwalk on the Chicago River.
The proposed Riverwalk on the Chicago River will be a continuous promenade that extends along the main branch of the Chicago River, about a mile and a quarter long, right through the heart of downtown, through Chicago's some of our most stunning views of our architecture. What we hope to do is take advantage of publicly owned land along one side of our river system, where we do have public access right now, but it's discontinuous. You can't get underneath the bridges. We have a lot of work to do to make the space really great and really attractive and usable. So we want to build out a promenade that extends into the existing waterway and connects underneath each bridge, allowing for programming and activities and commercial space that could be used to draw people down there and really take advantage of the stunning views that we have.
It must have been difficult to get approval to build into the river.
It was a long process of careful negotiation and analysis, something we've been working on maybe since the year 2000 or even earlier in the late 90s. Around that time, the city started on a project to rebuild the historic Wacker Drive, and we began working on how to build out a riverwalk at the same time. So Chicago River, for being as busy as it is very narrow. And there's a lot of traffic on it. So we had to work closely with the navigation interests and with the federal government to define the footprint in which we can build our riverwalk. But I think we've come up with a pretty good solution.
You imagine the riverwalk being how wide?
It will vary. We have existing space that we call the riverwalk right now. And that varies in character and in space. At its narrowest, it's maybe 20 feet right now. And then there are portions where it widens out a bit. The build-out that will make it continuous varies from 17 feet at its narrowest, where the river bends and is narrow, and all the way to 50 feet when you get near the western end by the Merchandise Mart, where you have an open vista looking down three branches of the river.
Why is Chicago just getting to this project?
You know, I don't know that we're just getting to it, is that the time is finally right to really push it to the next step. We've been doing a lot of work on our river system as a whole, and this is just one piece of what we're trying to build on our river. We have 28 miles of riverfront on the Chicago River in our system, and we're looking at a continuous trail system along the entire thing. We're about halfway there. There's been such great progress, much of it working with the private sector, to build publicly accessible river walks and also new parkland along the river, that it's kind of time to pay attention to what will be the crowning jewel. I think just the pieces are coming together that now is the time to make this happen.
Do you have a master plan for the entire river?
Mm-hmm. The Chicago River Corridor Development Plan was passed in 1999. And it sounds like, it's approaching 10 years old. But it's still a very valid plan. We've accomplished a lot of what's in there, but there's still gaps. It set out a framework, though, for really working to take advantage of our river system as an asset like our lakefront, and working within the existing constraints to build public access, to build a continuous trail system, to work with the private sector to accomplish those things, and think about how we really improve that space to make it our, not our second waterfront anymore, but part of our first.
And your first waterfront is?
Of course, Chicago's magnificent lakefront.
How do you imagine the lake and the river becoming one?
Well, I think that, the pieces are coming into place one by one. And the Chicago Riverwalk through downtown Chicago is a key link. It's where the river meets the lake. Right now, it's physically accessible. You can get from our magnificent lakefront trail to a portion of the Chicago Riverwalk. But I think it's sort of a undiscovered gem. I don't think a lot of people really know that that's there. And we need to make those connections underneath our bridges that you don't have to walk up and downstairs, so that it's fully accessible for everybody and that there's vibrant activity down there that will draw people in from the lakefront, making that connection with the new residential community that's growing in the loop, with the tourists who come to see downtown Chicago. I think it's just time for that link to happen. We have sort of a river walk right now, but you may have heard me tell this joke before. We have vendors down there right now, and some fairly successful activity making use of the public space we do have along the river. But they like to call it the river climb, because at every block, and Chicago has a number of movable bridges on our river that stick out into the river. You can't get around them down at the water level right now. So at every single block, you have to go back up the stairs to the upper level, and our river walk is a full two stories below the main street grid. So in order to move along our river walk, you go up and down the stairs at every block, for now.
Who developed the Chicago River Corridor Plan? Was it done inside City Hall or outside?
The Chicago River Corridor Development Plan that I mentioned earlier, which is for the entire city limits, includes the Chicago River Walk in it. It's been a concept that's been out there for so long that it's actually hard to answer that question. There has been quite a bit of public process, working with advocacy groups, Friends of the Chicago River, the local chambers and that kind of a thing, and with the private sector as well located on the river. But the actual plan for what we're going to build and how we're going to build it was done internally within the city. A lot of it is how do we work with the somewhat challenging physical conditions that are there right now? The fact that our river is lower than our street grid and that we have these bridges to get around. So it sort of started with the engineering challenges of how can we make these connections? And then working with our planning department and a number of the interest groups and river stakeholders, looking at, okay, then how do we use this space? Who's it for? What are the demographics? What's the market? What can we put there that will be of a benefit to people and help draw people there? So it's sort of a public-private partnership.
The Chicago River is at an interesting place in the city. North of the river, there's the shopping district and North Michigan and River North. And south of the river, of course, there's the loop and what has been the office district. So how does the river serve to connect those two important pieces of geography?
It is very interesting. I mean, the river is, in some sense, we haven't taken advantage of it. It's almost a bit of a missing link. We have the Loop, you know, the commercial center of the city, and a growing residential community that's becoming much more of a presence, along with what's happening on River North and with the businesses and residential community there, the tourist district along Michigan Avenue and the shopping district, and then the connection further east to Navy Pier, the river is sitting right in the middle of all that. And a tremendous opportunity to take advantage of that sort of key link in real estate and in linking these different uses and communities.
Where are you in building the Riverwalk now?
Well, we are at the point this year where we are starting to build the first couple of blocks that will be our build-out connecting underneath the bridges. So we're trying to kind of move in two scales at the same time. One is, how do we take advantage of the space we have now? How do we work with what we've got to try and raise awareness of the river and make the space that we have now as good as it can be? So we've put programming down there. You can go get a sandwich. You can go rent a bicycle. You can catch a water taxi. There's all kinds of things you can do down there, and taking advantage of the existing stunning views that we have. People love to go down and be near the water, especially when it's nice out in the summertime. It's a great place to go on your lunch hour. At the same time, we're aggressively moving forward with the build-out that we ultimately want to complete. And this year in 2008, we'll be getting underway with the first two blocks, the first two of what will be over 10 underbridge connections that we do need to build. I think that'll be really key, because the Riverwalk has been an idea that's been out there for a long time. But we're finally going to see a real big physical change that I think will really help drive the momentum for completing the entire project.
Is there an overall theme or program to the development?
It's something we're working with. The mayor launched a development committee late in 2007 to try and engage the stakeholders and businesses located along the river in really thinking about, how do we go beyond creating a new walkway, a new promenade, and how do we make this something really great, a real draw for downtown Chicago? And so that's something that we're trying to work on developing right now. Some of the ideas that have come about is, what's unique about Chicago that we really want to feature on the Riverwalk? What would people want to come to this promenade to see? And one of the things that's emerged as something we want to try and build on is Chicago's growing status as a place where green technology and sustainability are really at the forefront. We haven't figured out exactly how we do that yet, but it's something that will be a very much a part of whatever we do.
You're an avid cyclist and canoeist. How do you imagine using the riverfront? How do you imagine using the Riverwalk? Where does it get personal for you?
That sort of brings to mind the river has so many different characters. It changes as you move through the city. So there's a little bit of something for everyone. The downtown area where we're talking about the Riverwalk build out, if you know what you're doing, it's a stunning place to go paddling. Yeah, I mean, you won't have views like this anywhere else in the world. There's some danger there, though. You do need to know what you're doing, because there's a lot of traffic. But if you're a beginner, if you're a parent with young kids like me and you want to take your family out, when you get away from downtown, there's some wonderful parkland along the river where you can go rent a canoe or kayak and try it out and not have to worry about crossing paths with a large commercial tour boat. Same with cycling. We are slowly, piece by piece,